There is no single way to grieve a loved one. Some celebrate the life of a loved one happily. Others go through a mourning period that seems as if it will seldom end. But no matter how you mourn, our guests today say it's important to talk about it. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we hear the story of Von Kaufman, who last year lost his son Jacob to a tragic accident. What happened after that was inspiring and uplifting. That plus will be joined by a former Olympic champion whose own path conveys the exemplary tale of survival. We'd also like to hear how you've dealt with losing a loved one. Coming up, how we mourn the dead and what the survivors have to say. That's on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. In August of 2011, Von Kaufman received a phone call he would never forget. His son Jacob had fallen from a cell tower near Columbia, Missouri. What happened next was something many grieving families will also never forget. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Joining us now is Von Kaufman, a Topeka resident who founded the site ForTheSurvivors.org, in part to deal with the sudden and tragic death of his 21-year-old son, Jacob. Von, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Jabalani.
Give us some context and some background. Take us back to that very painful day when your son passed.
I was actually at work. My son Jordan, who is Jacob's twin brother, called me and said that he had gotten a call that Jacob had fallen from a cell tower. Just complete panic. Trying to figure out how we could get to, they had flown him to Columbia, Missouri, as quickly as we could. Your mind is just all kinds of thoughts, not knowing if he was going to make it. You know, he fell about 84 feet. So, you know in your heart that that's going to be pretty tough to survive, but you're praying. Of course, you're frantically making phone calls to family members, to the hospital. We got there and he didn't make it. So you're dealing with, his twin brother who is just distraught. I'm distraught. And then having to try to make some decisions on the spot, when you're not prepared to do so.
Both ironically and prophetically, Jacob was talking to you maybe just 2 weeks before his death about how he wanted to be remembered.
Yeah, Jacob and Jordan graduated from Burlington High School in Burlington, Kansas, a town of about 3,000 people. And in about 24 months prior, they had lost five of their friends.
In a town of 3,000 people?
Yes.
Wow.
One of them just a couple of weeks before Jacob, Ben Burke was his name, and one just a couple of weeks before that, Skylar Hively. And when Jacob and Jordan had gone to Ben's visitation, they came home, and Jacob was really upset. And I said, "Why are you so upset?" And he said, I don't want a funeral like that." He said, "This is, if I die, this is what I want." And of course, I told him, "I don't want to have that conversation." He said, "Well, I do very dangerous work, and I don't want something like that. This is what I want." And he went kind of line by line with his brother and I of what he wanted. And I said, "Well, you know, I appreciate you telling me, you know, when I've been dead about 150 years, then you can pass away and I won't have to worry about it." But unfortunately, 2 weeks later, I think that was on July the 24th, he told me that, and on August the 11th, he passed away.
So you were then put in the position to have to make good on those wishes that you didn't want to have to make good on.
Right. He asked me to conduct his funeral. He actually wanted me to do a song. I write songs. He wanted to be cremated. He didn't want anybody to be dressed up. He wanted his friends just to get up and tell stories and share things, about his life and how maybe he had made an impact or a funny story, something like that. To be honest with you, most of the funeral is a blur to me.
I can imagine that. What has the grieving process been like?
Because I have surviving children. I have a daughter that's almost 25, and Jacob's brother, Jordan, who's 22 now. And I have a business to run. You know, I have 40 employees that rely on me, or at least partially on me. I felt like I had to keep myself more together than maybe I otherwise would have. Luckily, I started seeing a psychologist, Dr. John Farrell Higgins, in Topeka, and he was able to give me some really good tips on how to deal with grief. Also, you know, having an opportunity to visit with some other family members who have lost a son or a daughter has helped also.
And you mentioned the other family members of the boys from Burlington mm-hmm. who passed before Jacob,
yes.
sort of freak accident, succession of deaths.
Right.
You thought maybe you could deal with the death of a child just by seeing the grief that they went through.
Partially, yes. You know, some of those families had gone through some grief counseling. Many of them had not. One of the things I knew for sure after things settled a little bit was that I wanted to establish a website or some resource for parents that find themselves in that position. For example, when I got to the hospital, not only am I trying to console my son who's there with me, but I'm faced with, okay, how do I get my son home? Well, you know, the social worker, she was very sweet and very kind, but well, you know, your son died in a different state than he resides in, so he's going to have to be embalmed. That's law. Because he died in a work-related accident,
it'll have to be an autopsy.
Has to be an autopsy. She said, because it is work-related, you know, you may want to consult an attorney before you have him transported back. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I don't know any funeral home in Columbia, Missouri to get him embalmed. I don't know an attorney licensed in Missouri. You know, I didn't know what to do. So when the smoke kind of cleared a little bit, I thought, I'm going to establish some kind of resource. At that time, I wasn't aware that there actually are a few other resource-based websites out there, Compassionate Friends probably being the best known. So I went ahead and got mine set up, and really my whole goal was to have no more than three clicks to get anything that you need. And I put a lot of work and invested a lot of money into this.
And tell us about that. The site is called forthesurvivors.org.
Right. What I wanted to have on there was, for example, I knew a lot of these families had not gone through any sort of grief counseling. So I got in contact with Psychology Today magazine. I said, I know you have a database because I've seen it in your magazine of psychologists and therapists around the United States. Is there a way to customize that so that I can put it on a website? I only get folks that deal with grief, but I wanted to take it a step further. I didn't want just a list of names. I wanted a picture, their website, their background. And so what we've developed is, you know, if you live in Pocatello, Idaho, you go to the counselor tab on the page, you click Idaho, you click Pocatello, you know, boom. There's just a list with pictures and their background and biographical information of a psychologist. Now, if you're going to go and try to get some counseling, it's really difficult to just pour everything out to a total stranger. This way, before you even go and make your appointment, you can see what they look like. You can see their background information. It helps you make a better decision in terms of your counselor. And then, you know, every kind of grief support group that I could find is on there. The legal component, there's a tab, but it gives you a couple of paragraphs of why you might need legal counsel if you lose a child. And then some links to the American Bar Association and each state's bar association. Things like that.
Did it help you as you put together the site? You're trying to maintain a business. You're trying to console your children. You're trying to be strong for the family, as the cliche goes.
Yes.
Did this help you in your grief process at all?
Absolutely. Anybody that knows me knows I'm just not very good at sitting around. I don't watch a lot of TV. I have to be doing something. And that's my way of dealing with things. By trying to help other people, I was trying to accomplish a couple of things. My son, and not trying to make my son out to be anything other than he's just great young man. But he really was always attempting to do something for somebody else. And that really came out at his funeral when folks got up and started talking. I thought, how can I best honor his memory? Well, the way that I could think of was to put this website together so that any family, you know, my goal is anybody around the world that loses a child, I want my website to be available to them to help them have an easier time through the process than I had. So, yes, it's been very helpful.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jawalani LaFall. Our guest is Von Kaufman, a Topeka resident who founded the website ForTheSurvivors.com, in part to deal with the sudden and tragic death of his 21-year-old son, Jacob. Kansas City, how have you dealt with the pain of losing a loved one in constructive ways? We want to hear your compelling stories of living with and overcoming your pain and grief after the untimely passing of someone close to you. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts to centralstandard@kcur.org or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @kcurcst. What are some of the different ways that people grieve the loss of a loved one that you're seeing from your site? I know you've been busy. A lot of people immediately get busy just filling their lives with activity and stuff to deal with the grief. Some just sort of sit dormant. We all deal with our grief in different ways. What types of ways have you seen?
You know, everything that you just mentioned. I know a family that it's been 33 years since they lost their son. It just came out in kind of a casual conversation that they had lost a son. I told her that I'd lost a son and gave her the information on my website. And she told me, you know, my family, we never dealt with the loss of the son. We never talked about it. And she said, for example, she said, I gained over 200 pounds in the last 30 years. She said, I don't know the last time that I laughed or smiled. The relationship with my surviving son has been destroyed because, in his opinion, everything became about the son that was lost. The relationship with my husband was destroyed. You know, the generation just ahead of me, for example, was, you know, you just sort of grin and bear it. You just don't discuss that. And in a lot of the letters in the book that I'm working on, I found that that's the way that people deal with it. So it's everything from folks that set up little shrines in their homes, and to constantly be reminded and remember the lost loved one, to the folks that just bury it and try not to deal with it. Unfortunately, when you try to just suppress it and bury it and don't have an outlet for it, it manifests itself in other ways that are extremely unhealthy.
So the key point here, the takeaway here, is if you do lose a loved one, you do need to talk about it.
Absolutely. You know, if you don't feel comfortable going and getting therapy, for example, or you feel that you can't afford it, find someone. There are grief support groups available in any city that you live in, and you can find them on my website. And again, on the website, I'm not selling anything, and I don't accept any donations. So I'm truly established this just simply to help folks. But if you go there, you can find a grief support group. I've actually established a For the Survivors support group. We have meetings in Topeka 4 times a year. There's a new chapter that's here in Kansas City that's going to have meetings 4 times a year. Just come. And, you know, even if you don't feel like sharing the first time that you come and you just sit and listen to other folks give suggestions on how they've dealt with their grief or things of that nature, the things they've done on their path toward healing, it will help you.
We're talking with Von Kaufman, who lost his 21-year-old son, Jacob. Kansas City, how have you dealt with the pain of losing a loved one? How have you grieved, and how are you surviving that pain? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in your thoughts to centralstandard@kcur.org or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is @kcurcst. Now, Von, you involved yourself in narrative therapy. That was one of the things that you looked at, one of the things that you researched.
Yes.
After Jacob's death. Tell us about that.
Dr. Farrell Higgins, not only am I seeing him, but my son Jordan had been seeing him as well. Jordan was very angry that we were not able to get to the hospital before Jacob passed away. And one of the things that Dr. Farrell Higgins asked Jordan to do was to write a letter to Jacob. And Jordan came to me and said he thought it was kind of a ridiculous idea. But after a couple of weeks, he said, "Hey, I wrote that letter." And I said, "Well, how was it?" And he said, "It was really, really helpful." So I thought, well, you know, I'll write a letter to Jacob. And I did. And when you handwrite something, there's just this release of emotion. It's almost like you're having a conversation, a real conversation. So I asked Dr. Farrell Higgins, I said, how does that work? And he said, well, you know, writing a letter is just a small part of a process called narrative therapy. And that there, you know, it's proven that when you handwrite a letter, it releases emotions, chemicals in your body. And it's one of the best forms of therapy for that type of stress and that type of grief.
What are some of the things that you said to Jacob in your letter?
I told him I was mad at him because I had to get a tattoo. He had a tattoo and always wanted me to get one, so I got a tattoo with his name on it. I told him I wished I had been more firm on him not taking that particular job. I didn't like the idea of him working that high off the ground. You know, told him how much I loved him and how proud I was of him, and that just because he's not here doesn't mean I'm still not his dad, or that relationship's still not there.
You mentioned some of the inspiration for this letter being Abraham Lincoln, who lost his son before he was assassinated.
Yes.
And the funny thing about that letter writing is that those letters were sealed in an envelope. They weren't even sent. So
right.
Talk about how therapeutic it is just to release that.
Yeah. You know, the writing of the letter is as much for the person that wrote it, maybe more than the person that's getting it. As I was researching the Letters Project book that I'm working on, I discovered that Abraham Lincoln was a big letter writer, and he would write letters to political foes, enemies of the state, you know, folks that he disagreed with, but he wouldn't mail them. When he was assassinated, they found in his desk drawers and in his file cabinets hundreds of letters that were sealed and said, "Do not send." You know, he understood that the power was really in the writing of the letter and getting it off of his chest. He didn't need to have someone read it. He lost two of his sons before he was assassinated. He actually lost two more after he was assassinated, you know, before they reached the age of 18. But his son, Willie, he wrote a short letter to after the son died of typhoid fever. So he was using, they probably didn't call it narrative therapy back then, but he was a very wise man.
I myself are working on 18 letters for my sons for when they turn 18. They can't even read them now, but they're on various subjects. So even though, thank God, they're still here,
yes,
they're not able to read them, but it's something that you can get off your chest.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea.
We're going to talk about your book, The Letters Project, Letters to Loved Ones, in just a second, but right now we're going to go to Barbara from Overland Park. Hello, Barbara. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. I'm such a big believer in the power of going to a counseling group, talking to a therapist. I was a young wife. I was 29 years old when my Navy fighter pilot husband was killed in combat during the Vietnam War. And I can tell you, and I went back to school, went back to college, there was nothing available. I had three small children. I had no idea how to deal with this sudden total change in my life, the loss of my husband. His body was lost at sea. It was never recovered. And my children all suffered a lot of trauma because of this. One son in particular, which ultimately led to my writing a book, My Angry Son, which now, by the way, is on Kindle, to really share with other people the powerful challenges that we faced, because there was no support. And I didn't know what to do, and my children didn't know how to deal. It was a very, very difficult time. So the challenge of, or if you have lost a loved one, whether it's a child, a parent, a husband, a wife, is so important to get counseling.
Thank you very much, Barbara, for your contribution to the conversation on grief and loss today on Central Standard, and tweeted us at KCURCST and says, "What a beautiful, beautiful show. Thanks to your guest for sharing his story and passion. His suggestions are right on target." Speaking of your suggestions, Von Kaufman, you dealt with 45 grieving families, more than 45 grieving families, through a friend, encouraging other families to write letters before this book project got started. Tell us about how that came about and how it led to the Letters Project, Letters to Lost Loved Ones.
You know, before I lost my son, I really only knew five or six families that had lost a child. And, you know, I own, or co-own with my partner, Terry McCart, heating and cooling and plumbing business in Topeka. I go out, I have the pleasure of going out and being in several houses a day. If people need replacement products for their home, I go out and give them estimates. You know, I don't go into somebody's house and say, "Hey, I'm Vaughn and I lost my son." But one thing that happens after you lose a child is you actually start to recognize little clues that they leave. For example, you might see pictures of their children from infant stage to today, and one child, the newest picture, is 10 years old. Well, that's a clue. Sometimes parents set up little shrines. So it comes up in conversation. One of the things in visiting with these families is that, you know, people are very concerned that their child will be forgotten. And also, even though you may know another person or another parent that lost a child, it's a very isolating feeling. You feel like there's nobody that can possibly understand. So one of the things that I did early on is I decided that I was just going to have a lunch for as many of these families as I knew that had lost a child. And I would just pay for the lunch, and I have a good friend who has McFarland's restaurant in Topeka, and he offered to let us use the basement. And I just invited like 50 families to come. I said, and in the invitation, I said, "You don't have to say a word. If you want to bring a picture of your lost child, bring it. If you want to share, you can. If you just want to have lunch and go home, great." And so that's kind of how this got started. They all came, and one of the things I did is I shared with them how Jordan and I had written letters to Jacob, and that I just asked the group, you know, "Have any of you done that?"
None of them had.
None of them. Other than the five families from Burlington, four of those five families I had suggested early on that they write letters. But beyond that, none of them had.
You lost your son Jacob to an untimely and tragic death. But when you read someone else's letters, what type of solace, what type of understanding?
Extremely helpful, because you feel that you're not alone. Even though you may have written your own letter and expressed everything, in reading the letters of someone else who's experienced the same type of loss, you feel a sense of community. You feel a sense of understanding. You feel like, I can do this. If they can do it and they can survive this, so can I. So it's very healing to read the letters of someone else who's done this before you.
How did the letters from the people at the Topeka restaurant turn into a book?
You know, originally what I did is I wrote, or Jordan and I wrote our letter, and actually my parents had written a letter to Jacob. And I'd suggested to these other families from Burlington that they write letters. Because I'm a songwriter, Jordan had asked me to turn his letter into a song. And that kind of led to making songs for just those families in Burlington. And we were just referring to it on Facebook as the Letters Project. I would update when I would go to the recording studio and work on one of these songs. And I meant for it to be something very private just for those my family and those other five families. And I had a good friend who encouraged me, said, "You know, you really should try to make this into a book with a CD." Now, this is a year ago that this was going on, and I said, "No, those letters are very private. I'm doing this just for this small group. I don't have the permission even to do something like that from these folks. And it just kind of went from there. You know, I asked the group at the lunch, are you interested? And they all said yes.
Our guest is Von Kaufman, a Topeka resident who founded the website forthesurvivors.org in part to deal with the tragic death of his 21-year-old son, Jacob. Kaufman is also behind a new book project called The Letters Project, Letters to Lost Loved Ones. When we return, we talk to a 5-time Olympic and world champion about his connection to the Letters Project, along with his own story of grieving the loss of loved ones. Kansas City, how have you dealt with the pain of losing a loved one in constructive ways? We want to hear your compelling stories of living with and overcoming your pain and grief after the untimely passing of someone close to you. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and Twitter. Our handle there is @KCURCST. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We've been hearing a story of Von Kaufman about the death of his son Jacob, a tale that is at once tragic and inspiring. We're also talking about Kaufman's website, forthesurvivors.org. Kaufman is also behind a new book project called The Letters Project, Letters to Lost Loved Ones, where the survivors who have lost people close to them write letters to the people who have passed away but whose memories remain. Kansas City, how have you dealt with the pain of dealing with losing a loved one in constructive ways? We want to hear your compelling stories of living and overcoming your pain and grief after the untimely passing of someone close to you. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write into us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And joining us now by phone from Los Angeles is perhaps the most well-known Olympic diver in the history of the Olympics, Greg Louganis, a 5-time Olympic medalist and world champion. Greg Louganis, welcome to Central Standard.
Great to be here.
Now, what compelled you to get involved with Letters to Lost Loved Ones? You're writing the foreword to this book. Tell us how that happened.
Well, I've done this for so long. I mean, right? I wrote a book for the life of your dog, and that was one way that I dealt with the grieving and the loss of a pet. You know, sometimes it was untimely. Sometimes I saw it coming. You know, but still, it was a way in which I was able to find peace with their passing. I also learned through the loss of my dad, dealing with the loss. We came to terms. I took care of him the last 6 weeks of his life. He succumbed to cancer, and we made peace with each other. But there were some loose ends that he left that I had some anger issues about, and so I wrote him letters, and it allowed me to heal. It allowed me to find a place of peace and forgiveness.
Von Kaufman, you read about Greg Louganis' writing letters in the back of Men's Journal, and tell us how that came about.
I read Men's Journal, every month when it comes, and the first thing I read is the back page, and it's just various, athletes, musicians, actors that they ask them questions. It's kind of giving advice. This last time, it was Greg Louganis, and in reading through the questions, I was really pleasantly surprised. One of the questions was, how should a man handle loss? And he said he handled loss by writing letters. And I was really so excited because, I graduated from high school in 1983. Greg Louganis was the stuff. I mean, he was the stuff, and just so proud of all the things that he's overcome. I've read his book, Breaking the Surface, and I thought, I'm going to reach out and see if he would be interested in writing a letter for my book. I got a hold of his manager, and he was kind enough to do even more than I asked, and that is to write the foreword for the book, and I'm just so excited about that.
Greg Louganis, what were the personal circumstances that gave you a personal connection to this project? You mentioned your father's passing. You mentioned the death of a beloved pet. What were the other personal connections?
Well, it's the way that I learned how I might be able to, you know, find that peace and forgiveness within my heart, you know, surrounding all circumstances. You know, when you lose a loved one, I mean, I even lost my mom in 04, and it was just a way to stay connected in such a way and find that peace and allow them to live in my heart, you know, and they aren't here physically, but they'll always be a part of me.
You deal with some semblance of survival every day. You have an incredible story of survival. What are the lessons you can impart for people who are involved in a grieving process?
You know, I think that it's a lot of times, you know, we just, you know, initially look at the loss and feel, you know, have this vacuum, you know, and really, I mean, dealing with that, you know, and writing the letters, you know, getting to the other side of it and seeing how blessed we were to have them as a part of our life, and they will always be a part of our life. They're a part of our identity and a part of who we are, you know, and I try to live my life that way. You know, my mom's words of wisdom, you know, make everywhere you go better because you were there. So it's just like I you know, those are words that I try and live by on a daily basis.
What do you get, Greg Louganis, out of letter writing to the dead?
Well, you know what? A lot of times there's unresolved issues and things that you wanted to say but didn't have the time to or didn't have the chance to, you know, and this is a way for you to express that and get that out and forgive yourself, and because you have to forgive yourself first, and then you can, you know, be in a place to forgive others.
And sort of getting that off the chest, as with your father or with other loved ones who you may have had issues with, or you may have mm-hmm. had things that you didn't tell them, is therapeutic for you as well.
It's very therapeutic, and you know what? I mean, I laugh and I cry in my letters.
I understand completely.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a joy to share that, and you know, it can be personal. You don't have to share it with anybody, you know, but it gets you to a place of peace in your own heart.
What advice do you have for people, Greg Louganis, who have just lost something or someone so near dear to them and they don't know how to get forward? What is the immediate thing that you think about?
You know, put pen to paper and write them letters and just, you know, and you'll hear their voice in your head, and you'll realize, you know what, they're not gone. They're a part of you, and they always will be, you know, and to cherish those lessons that, you know, that they probably taught you, you know, as you were developing and on your journey.
Do you ever pull the letters back out and read them multiple times, or is it just once you've got it off your chest, you're done with it? How do you deal with the letters? Do you pull them out and read them again?
Sometimes if there's, you know, I found with the loss of my dad, I was pulling those letters out and rereading them, you know, because, you know, there was some unresolved issues, you know, and that was to make peace in my own mind, in my own heart, you know, with my sister. So, you know, it actually enables me to heal the relationships that I still have that are ongoing.
What do you hope or think people will take from this book, The Letters Project, Letters to a Lost Loved One, that you're writing forward to? What do you think they'll take from not only your words, but the experiences and other letters in this book?
Well, I feel it's an exercise for survival, and survival in a way that is quality, you know, quality survival, not just, you know, getting through the day, but, you know, to find that joy and peace in your heart, you know, even though, I mean, I still want to pick up the phone and call my mom, you know, but I can do that in a letter. You know, when good things happen, when bad things happen, you know, I still write letters.
Immediately, you sit down and write it.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so much I want to share, you know, and this way I'm able to do it in a way that, you know, that's tangible to me, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be shared with anyone else. And, you know, and their voices live in my head, and they live in my heart.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're talking with Greg Louganis, a five-time Olympic medalist and world champion, about the process of surviving grief, surviving amid grief, and his involvement in a local book project called The Letters Project, Letters to a Lost Loved One. That project is spearheaded by our studio guest, Von Kaufman, a Topeka resident who founded the website ForTheSurvivors.com in part to deal with the sudden and tragic death of his 21-year-old son, Jacob. We have a lot of people in radio land and listening within the sound of our voice today that want to talk to us about their grieving process. Kansas City, you can join that conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also write in at centralstandard@kcur.org or hit us up on Facebook and Twitter, where our Twitter handle is @KCURCST. Greg Louganis, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for being involved in this project. I think it'll be rewarding for a lot of people.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
We got Gwen in Cedar Point. Gwen, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you.
Rip it away.
I will. It was really great to hear Greg Louganis, and it's an honor to be on the call today. It was over a decade ago. I lost my best friend, and we had been athletes together since we were 4 years old. I lost her when she was about 30. And then within the year and a half after that, I lost my mother-in-law, my brother-in-law, who were also very young, to cancer, and lost my marriage partially over this as well. So tremendous sense of loss, and I have never written letters, and so this show is actually encouraging me to sit down and write some letters. I do talk with these folks in my head, getting through different challenges in life. But my grief period it took a long time to get over that tremendous sense of loss, but on the growth path and what has influenced me is those amazing loved ones that I've lost have offered me the opportunity, I think, to take more risks and to kind of go for my dreams and do some really remarkable things in my own life. So, including moving out to the Flint Hills in Kansas to be with a fabulous guy and to be a leader in my organization and to start a restaurant, too, with a great business partner out there in the Flint Hills. So I see the positive side of this, but I'm really encouraged that writing letters might be a great, great opportunity for me as well.
Thank you so much, Gwen, for sharing your story. Now, that's an important point that Gwen makes.
Yes.
You can lose relationships with people who are still living while grieving the loss of a loved one, which is why it's important to deal with the loss of a loved one.
I think the statistic is somewhere around 65% of marriages where they lose a child end in divorce, which is staggering. That, to me, shows the importance of getting help and getting help early, going in and getting some counseling early.
Which reminds me, how do you even begin to talk to your wife about something like that, to address that issue of your boy?
Well, in my case, we were divorced and had been for quite some time.
Still the mother of your child.
Absolutely. And it, you know, we had been getting along well prior to that, and now we don't communicate.
Wow.
So, and it's unfortunate, and it's really nobody's fault. It's just one of those situations where, you know, your emotions are running so high, and while you have that shared history of having children together, you also have the history of no longer being married, and it just kind of exacerbates things. It's easy for things to get misunderstood. And so I can imagine that when you are in a situation where you are married, and if you think about it, a husband and wife may deal with their grief entirely different. And each one of them, I find, can be very judgmental of how the other one's doing it. Well, I'm very upset with my husband because he doesn't cry over Jimmy. You know, obviously it's just not as big of a deal, or he doesn't want to talk about it. Or I don't know why she feels like she's got to cry all the time and why she's so angry all the time. It just creates a multitude of problems.
Are there any tools on the website or that you've learned about in narrative therapy or even through letters that can deal with that sort of consternation among the living?
Yes, to all of your questions. There are great resources on my website where people can go get family counseling and individual counseling. If you can't afford counseling, there are a lot of counselors out there that will work, you know, with you in terms of the financial part of it. And then the letter writing, not only to write the letter to your lost son or daughter or your lost loved one, but maybe to write a letter to your spouse. I found that a lot of these folks, it's been very helpful to them, to just communicate everything you're feeling to your husband or to your wife as far as your own path toward healing. And how it may differ from theirs, and what you're looking for, and what help you need to get through the situation.
Derek and Leewood, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you for having me.
You wanted to talk about letter writing, grief?
Yeah, just about a year ago, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and it was a matter of borrowed time. And so rather than wait for her to pass to put things into words, I just made a list of all our favorite moments together, big and small, and mailed her a copy and kept a copy for myself, and it gave us both a chance to connect over things that mattered a lot to us. And I refer back to that list as a father of a teenager, hoping I can honor my mom in some way by kind of living up to how she treated me.
That's great.
Thank you so much, Derek. We just mentioned writing letters to people who are still living or may be
absolutely
on their way to make that transition. Is that important as well?
Absolutely. We're working on a project, I and a couple of other folks, kind of for that very purpose. We're working on a second book that is going to be letters from critically ill children. One of their big fears is in being forgotten. You know, why was I even born? Why am I even here? The only kids oftentimes they know are other critically or terminally ill kids. And so giving them an opportunity to write a letter about themselves, and we're going to incorporate a little piece of art from an art therapist named Jancy Pettit, and then Jeffrey Franks, who's a grief counselor here in town. We're all collaborating on this book. It's very important to write letters to the living as well.
Are these critically ill children, are they writing letters to their parents? Are they writing stories about themselves?
Right, about themselves. Jeffrey Franks has a blog on her website, and in reading the blog, she talks about a story from a little girl up at Children's Mercy Hospital about 4 years old. She asked a nurse, you know, will anybody remember me when I'm gone? Or will anybody miss me when I'm gone? And, you know, it brought tears to my eyes. I understood about a parent being concerned about their child being forgotten. It never occurred to me that a critically or terminally ill child would have the same fear. And so in visiting with her and a couple of other psychologists that I interviewed for the book, I found out that that is a fear that's expressed all the time by someone that's critically or terminally ill. So we're going to give them an opportunity to tell their story and to create a piece of art to go along with that story.
You got Jerry in KCK. Welcome to Central Standard, Jerry.
Thank you.
Tell us all about your grief.
Well, I've gone from a family of 5 to just 2. And the best advice I received after my mom passed was to think good thoughts. Think of the good times that you had together. And each day you find out that you've made it through another day. And when that day hits you that you're so bombarded with grief that you can think on the good things, the good times you had together, and it helps you get through.
Thank you very much, Jerry, for sharing your story. Catherine in Lawrence, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, I have found that, about a month ago, I lost a very close friend, the earliest contact I've had in my life for a long time. And it brings up a lot of other deaths that I've been through, and listening to the program also does. I have been like journaling. I've written poetry about friends in the past, not this current friend. I've not tried the letters, so I appreciate that idea. I have found a couple things with my friend's death this past month. One of them is that she had a granddaughter, has a granddaughter that is about 7 years old, and I really related to her granddaughter because I lost my brother when I was about five, and my parents went through this whole thing of it was God. One said it was God's fault. One said it was God's will. And I've also heard a line that I hear a lot is it was her time. And I just don't think when it comes to cancer that it's anything like any of that. And but I have found some good friends that have been supportive. Therapy's been supportive. Like I said, journaling. What's not been supportive is that the employment places really do not understand the bereavement process when you lose a friend. You get time off, paid time off for bereavement. If it's family members, I have no longer any contact with my family. And some of the people, like I said, I lost my brother when we were children, lost my mother a few years ago, and yet with my mother, I didn't even know until a month after she died. So I didn't take time off for that. But, you know, people really don't, some people, employment and stuff, don't understand what that's like to lose a very close friend and someone that you've sat through cancer with. So that was my comments. I do appreciate your program. I will be looking up that website. If you could repeat.
ForTheSurvivors.com is the name of the website, Catherine.
It's what's called?
ForTheSurvivors.com.
Oh,
ForTheSurvivors.org, excuse me.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Catherine. She brings up a good point, Catherine does, about others acknowledging the loss that we've suffered, whether it be employers or other family members or friends or confidants. What should we expect from death? For instance, what did Jacob's death teach you about Von Kaufman, the man, the death of your son? What did it teach you about your philosophies toward life and death, toward chance and fate?
You know, I'm a very intense guy. But the very little bothers me anymore. You know, the only thing that I can even imagine, I have no fear of anything anymore other than the loss of my daughter, Kirsten, or my son, Jordan. Nothing else. You know, I sometimes tend to be a worrier, or was in the past. I don't worry about anything else much anymore. So it really puts into perspective what's really important. And really, you know, your family and your friends at the end of the day is where it's at.
We're talking about grieving with the loss of a loved one, Kelly in Parkville. Kelly.
Hi there.
Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you so much. I was just calling in regards to the remark about activities and behaviors that are therapeutic and cathartic in honoring the loved one. And I lost my father to lung cancer. He was only 62, and I was lucky to have had him that long, I know. But one of the things that a friend told me when I was grieving was that he lives on through me. And he was such a great dad, and one of the things I do to honor his memory and to help myself that connects to that comment my friend made was I engage in practices that I remember from my childhood. So, for example, he would always go to the pumpkin patch. We would get the biggest pumpkin available. I mean, the 80-pounder that cost however many dollars. I mean, we would load it up and take it. And now I do that with my kids, and so in a way, he does live on through
me. Absolutely.
And it does honor him, and I just wanted to share that because that has been very helpful to me. So thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. What do you think, Von Kaufman, that your son Jacob would think of this very touching homage to the dead and the dying and that you have now undertaken?
I think he would be thrilled. Jacob was my biggest fan when it comes to my songwriting. It's almost embarrassing to say, but when we picked his car up, in his 6-disc CD changer, 4 of the CDs were mine. On his phone, he had secretly videotaped me writing songs. Jacob was my biggest cheerleader, and I think he would be so thrilled with, because Jacob was always trying to help somebody else, always doing things as anonymously as he could for other people, and I think he would just be absolutely thrilled, and I think he is thrilled I feel like he is, every time I work on this, you know, and some of this is I'm doing very selfishly, meaning I feel that Jacob is right here with me every time that I reach out to another family, every time I work on the book or work on a song. I just feel that my son is right with me.
And when you're trying to find meaning and when you're trying to find solace, do you think that what you're doing now, helping these other people through their grieving processes, do you think, looking at it from a big picture perspective, that this might be the reason?
Absolutely. I don't believe that there are any accidents in life. And, you know, I think it was Jacob's time to go. And I know that probably sounds harsh. I certainly didn't want him to go. My pain is for myself, not for Jacob. I think he had done whatever it was he needed to do, and it was time for him to move on. So yeah, I think this is just all part of the big plan.
A project spearheaded by Von Kaufman, a Topeka resident, is a website called forthesurvivors.org, which he founded in part to deal with the sudden and tragic loss of his 21-year-old son, Jacob. He also have a forthcoming book called Letters Project, Letters to Lost Loved Ones, with another book, Letters from Critically Ill Children, in the works. We'd also like to thank Olympic diving champion Greg Louganis for joining us by phone to talk about how he deals with grieving the loss of a loved one. Von Kaufman, thank you for coming, and thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me, Javelin.
And tune in tomorrow when we soothe your election fatigue with a look at political humor, because only something so serious can be this funny. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander. Up to Date is next with Election 2012 coverage previews, that plus what you should drink to take the edge off on Election Day. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.